Would you join me in prayer? Almighty Father, we're so grateful to come before you on the day you created for man, a day of rest and worship, a day of honoring you, a day of refocusing and recalibrating our spiritual lives to align again with you. For we know it's easy to get off track. It's easy to become influenced by the world. But we know that we can trust in you to bring us back to the truth if we have a willing heart. So we ask for that today, and we ask for your guidance on this service and for all those who are sincerely seeking your word. There are many out there, and we know that many more hunger for you, and that we might be a vessel to take the truth to them. We ask for your healing on those who have asked for prayer as our Yahweh Rapha, that you would bless them and be with them. And now we ask for your continued guidance in this service and watch over us as we go forth from here and keep us safe for another week. In Yahshua's name we pray. Hallelujah. You may be seated. Well, greetings everyone from near and afar. Grateful to have you here. If you haven't been here for a week, look around and see all the changes that have happened just this last week. It's crazy as we prepare for the Feast of Tabernacles, getting the whole grounds ready. It's been a marathon, I'll tell you, but I keep telling people, and we have people want to move here, and I said, remember, this is a working assembly. No grass grows under our feet, except for, I hope, for the half acre we got planted out there. But we don't sit around, I'll tell you that. And the brethren here and those in the office know that. We are constantly busy. I mean, the outreach, the social media is just exploding. I don't know if you get the e-news, but I was dumbfounded when I heard there were 1.7 million views of Roku now. It's just Yahweh's working, and it's not us, it's him. We always want to give him the glory. So we're being blessed, and hopefully we'll be worthy of it always. My husband is not a believer, the letter read. At times he makes it very difficult for me to be true to my faith. How can I get him to follow the truth? This is an uncommon problem. This is one that's been going on for, probably millennia. The fact is, Yahweh doesn't call everyone at the same time. And that's the setup for this issue right here. Yahshua said, many are called, not all are called. Many are called. Jeremiah 3:14, the prophet says, I turn, O backsliding children, says Yahweh, for I am married unto you and will take you one of a city, two of a family, and I'll bring you to Zion. And those two may not be spouses. Could be separate. When it is not, the baptized spouse is going to deal with not only an unreceptive world, but maybe an unreceptive spouse. And of course, there's all levels there. We're talking about from outright rejection to curious and, allowing the other spouse to practice the faith. So here we have a setup for a situation. There's various degrees of opposition. Sometimes the family atmosphere can be downright hostile. We hear from people who have this problem. The unconverted spouse may not mean to be difficult. Maybe it's just out of ignorance. Just don't know. They don't understand. And so there's pushback, constant pushback. So while you wish to observe the Sabbath, your mate wants you to help with yard work, go visit friends, go to a movie, go to a restaurant, go shopping on the Sabbath, all sorts of Sabbath-breaking activities. Some have to attend the feasts alone. We have those whose husband or wife won't come along. And some face issues when they try to raise their children in the faith, and I feel so. My heart goes out to them, because I know how difficult it can be. Yahshua said in John 16:33, these things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace, but in the world you shall have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. So can we expect anything better than what Yahshua had to go through if we're following the same precepts, the same teachings obviously we're going to have the same issues to deal with that he did. That is the way of truth. So how do we deal with it? It's an ironclad promise from Yahshua himself to brace for some difficulties once you desire to take the walk of truth. And we counsel people who want to get baptized. Look, you're going to have immediate problems to face once you accept the truth. Nothing you can't overcome, but there's going to be some temptation of Satan, some trial of Satan, just as Yahshua did when he got baptized. Took him up to the mountain, and Satan tempted him. Yahshua himself had to brace these difficulties. Once you desire the word, you have to align with it, and that then puts the conflict together, because we know the world is not the word, and vice versa. They're at conflict. They're opposite ends of the spectrum. Yahshua said in Matthew 7:14, because straight is the gate and narrows the way which leads unto life, few there be that find it. It's called narrow for two reasons. Number one, it's easy to get off of it. It's a narrow way. You got to be vigilant all the time because there's going to be ways, turns, curves, hills, things like that are going to want to throw you off that way. So you can't deviate. The second reason is very few are going to be on it. That's why it's narrow. Very few. They prefer the broad way with a life of total freedom. Do whatever you want. That's what most people want. Free for self-indulgence. But that road leads to death, as we all know, not to salvation. We're going to reject that for something much greater, much greater. All married couples want a happy marriage. Open your Bibles to 1 Peter 2, where we find some key instructions on enjoying a successful marriage. The institution of the family comes directly from Yahweh himself, so he's got the key. He's got the answer. When there's problems in the marriage, when there isn't problems in the marriage, he's got the answer to a harmonious family. He has the formula. He also provides solutions when you got a common problem of how a believer can win over an unbelieving mate to Yahweh's truth. Maybe you and your spouse came in the truth together. Hallelujah. What a blessing that is. You came into the truth together. You don't have to face a lot of these issues that others who came into the truth after they were married may face because their husband or wife resists. They've got a whole different set of issues they got to deal with. But each of us probably knows, even if we did come into the faith together, we know others in family relationships, in relations that have this issue, have this problem. Before we get some of the answers from the Apostle Peter, we need to understand some groundwork that he lays in chapter 2. Here he explains that Yahweh's people are to be different. In other words, you can't blend in with the world of ignorance. You're going to have resistance. You're going to have to be different. That's just the way it is. But you see, Yahweh's looking for the cream. He doesn't want the regular. He wants the cream. Those who have shown by their resolve and their love of him, but they're going to stick with it no matter what. We have no choice. We have no choice. We give it up now, we're through. So we have to go forward. We know that. So we're even called peculiar. That doesn't mean you're weird. Maybe in some people's eyes, you're peculiar means you're possessed by somebody. You're owned by somebody, and that somebody, of course, is Yahweh. We're a peculiar ownership of Yahweh. They are Yahweh's treasure. And you don't get to be a treasure by being common. I can go out here and find lots of dirt everywhere. But it's dirt. It's not very useful for too much stuff. I can go out there and find gold, which is very uncommon, and that is a treasure. And that's what Yahweh's looking for. By being run-of-the-mill, you're going to be like everything else, by common property or whatever. If you're living Yahweh's believer's life, you already know this, but it's gratifying to realize the scriptures are completely on your side. Yahshua was on your side. He went through it too. We are Yahweh's people. We walk a tightrope at times. It means swimming against the current, day after day, month after month, navigating rocks and debris as we do so. There's no other way, and we're in it for the long haul. One of the first things you learn upon your conversion to the truth is that Yahweh's way is a struggle. It's a struggle sometimes. And that few are going to want it. Now, you probably did the same thing we did when we first came to the truth. You want to tell everybody. Hey, you know what? Did you know this about the Bible? Did you know that about the Bible? And they don't care. So, you know. Now, if they're spiritually inclined, they may have an interest. And that's what we're after, those who have a spiritual interest in their life. And they're really willing to walk. And it takes an extraordinary person. I've found through the years that the one who takes hold of the truth is the kind who, you know, has an inquiring mind, as that advertising goes. A kind who doesn't quite see things the way everybody else sees. He's different. He's unique. And that's typically the kind of people Yahweh's looking for. Those that will look beyond. Those will look through. They see not the normal. They see something better, something greater. They have a different way of looking at things. So, he found you, something in you, something special. That's why he called you. Something in you Yahweh wanted. He wants to use you. He says we're to become a kingdom of priests one day in the kingdom. He wants the best. And he wants those who have shown by their resolve, by their love, by their tenacity that they're going to stick with it. That's what he wants. In 2 Peter 2, Peter reveals some age-old sins. He says, verse 1, wherefore, laying aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisies and envies and all evil speakings, you know, all of these bubble up from the heart of the natural man. That's the natural man. That's how he thinks. That's how he acts. The chief desire of the natural man is to elevate himself. He's all about him, all about self. He's trying to get ahead in the world. It's all about me. What I can enjoy, what I can get, what I can gather, it's all about me. There are billions of narcissists out there in the world. We know that. We hit them every day. We see them every day. And wherever you find raw human nature, you're going to have someone who's interested in nothing but self. Distilled down to bare essences, there are only two basic religions in the world. There's Yahweh's truth, and there's the religion of self. All the pagan religions are built on self, some way of a man-made religion that's focused on self. They're all there to glorify the individual, now or later. Whether it's Hinduism, Buddhism, Zoroastrianism, Babylonianism, witchcraft, it's all false religion, and it's all based on the person, the self. They're concocted by man and emphasize man and what man can attain through certain man-made, whatever they require them to do, all the different formulas of worship. Peter shows us right and true things far better in the second verse. As newborn babes, desire the sincere milk of the word that you may grow thereby. Our desire is to please Yahweh. We have a sincere desire. The milk of the word, not ourselves. Peter admonishes us to become fixed on the way of life shown in Yahweh's word. And then grow in it. You got to get the foundation right. Then you grow in it. And then you're able to teach others. That's what he wants. Each of us to emulate the apostles, take the word out to the world, to become a servant of his. Let it become a part of you as you yield your life to the will of Yahweh. Even though your spouse may not share your faith at this time, you're never alone. Yahshua said he'll never forsake you. He'll never leave you. He'll always be with you. So take heart. You know, it may be tough at times, but hey, you've got an advocate, the best in the world. Note the contrast between verses 1 and 2. If you concentrate on the way taught in verse 2, that is growing in the word, you'll automatically turn from the evil spoken of in verse 1. Malice, guile, hypocrisy, envy, speaking evil, and so forth. Verse 4 explains, by using Yahshua as the supreme example, Yahweh finds something precious in you. Verse 5 says our goal is to be a holy priesthood, servants. So we learn how to serve now so that we can serve later in the kingdom, which is acceptable to Yahweh. What people find strange, Yahweh says, this is my way. What they find odd, he says, this is the way I want it. Because it's a narrow way, it's not broad. We can't expect millions of people to come over and understand the truth and accept it. It ain't going to happen because it's a narrow way. Never be afraid of being different in your beliefs, because in doing so, you're mirroring Yahshua, who was also very different. Why do you think he got the religious establishment all up in a snit? Every time he went somewhere and started speaking, boy, they were all worked up. Got to get rid of this guy. He's a threat. He's preaching this new set of faith that it ain't us, you know. So we got to get rid of him. Because they didn't understand the whole purpose of obedience. They had it all messed up. Everything was focused again on themselves, so they had their own religion going. Only he can redeem you in the end, not your family, not your friends, nobody. So who are you going to please? Not your spouse. He can't redeem you either. Neither can coworkers, neither can classmates. Only Yahweh can redeem you. So who are we out to please? Yahweh will have the final word in your destiny and mine. So it'd be wise and prudent to learn his way and stick with it to the end. Follow it rather than doing what all those others are out there doing and wanting you to do. You know, I know this is hard for young people because they want to fit in. They got this peer pressure. They asked a 101-year-old lady what she liked about her life now, and she says no peer pressure. You know, young people fight that all the time. That's why you have all these young people suicides all the time, because they're fighting peer pressure, and it's so powerful. They can't see beyond their little life now. And this is all going to pass, and they're going to be a whole adult on their own one day, and they can, you know, do whatever they want, and who cares, you know? But they are also concerned about what everybody's thinking, what everybody's doing, what they think of me, and they get all wrapped up in that. I know, we were all young at one time. But it'll all pass. And the things that matter are the things we want. So Yahweh's going to have the final word in our destiny. In other words, seek a different path from what you are on now, the vast majority path. He establishes from the start that the true worshiper is on a different level, basically, is what he's saying, on a different level, different understanding. Not superior, but a different understanding. It's a way of life ordained by the one who created us. It's not we who are out of sync, you know, with the world. It's the world that's lost its way with him, and that makes them out of sync with him, which puts us out of sync with them. If that makes sense. It's a world that has left the ways of the Creator and followed all sorts of other avenues and ways of sin. He says in verse 9 that we are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a righteous nation. Well, leading up to this, Peter instructs us, the believers, on living in this world and overcoming the world. Its sinful ways and its adverse reactions to the faith of Yahweh. Now in verse 2 and 11, chapter 2 and 11, he calls the brethren strangers and pilgrims. So you're kind of you don't really fit in, you know. You're not even part, because you're a pilgrim. You're moving on. And then he proceeds to give some practical and scriptural direction. In verse 12, he says to be a light to outsiders by having a pure tongue and honest work so that Yahweh might be glorified. I remember a denominational minister used to stop at the office where I worked, and he'd tell some off-color jokes, and it kind of shocked me. And I thought, what kind of witness are you and your denomination to these people when you tell off-color jokes like that? He was trying to fit in. What a witness. Now in 1 Peter 2:13, we're told to submit to every ordinance of man. In other words, human government at all levels. Why? Why? There's a time and a place for everything. For everything. And Yahshua didn't try to reform Rome. He says, give to Caesar what he wants so that we can go on in peace and do our thing. Get the word out. Do the work of Yahweh. So we don't have to be hampered by something like this if we don't pay our taxes, be thrown in jail or whatever. Pay Caesar what's his. Why create issues we don't need? Yahshua knew that his righteous government soon would overshadow everything on earth anyway. Just a matter of time, you know. Have some patience. Peter deals with three spheres of social responsibility. We're responsible to the government, of course. We're responsible to our employer, of course. And now we come to the third. Responsible to the family. My inspiration for this message is that the fall feasts are coming up. And we're going to get people say, I can't come because my spouse has something going on. Hopefully it's not health issues, but something going on and I got to be there. And, you know, I mean, the gamut runs, wow, wide open. So they have made a choice. They're going to follow a relative, a spouse, instead of the dictates of their faith. My question is, why can't you come anyway and teach them how important this faith really is? Instead of capitulate. Instead of staying home. I mean, this is a command, right? If you let an unbelieving spouse determine your fidelity to Yahweh when it comes to feast keeping, do you also let them determine your Sabbath keeping? Whether you're going to keep the Ten Commandments or not. Do you let an unbeliever determine whether you're going to honor Yahweh's name? Whether you're going to raise the children in the faith? I mean, where does it end? It all comes in a package, and you cannot pick and choose your obedience to Yahweh. If you capitulate in any part of your walk, you're not only seriously endangering your relationship with Yahweh, but you're handing that unbeliever an excuse, a reason, a justification to reject the truth. After all, why should she accept the truth if you don't? And you're supposed to be the one following it. You see the problems that raises? They'll judge you by your faith and by your actions. Guaranteed. That's guaranteed. As the old saying goes, you may be the only Bible people read. And if you can't live your faith by being obedient to Yahweh's command, what good is it? Because you're a negative. You're a negative impact on others. Believe me, others are watching. They're watching. In fact, I know of one unbelieving spouse who would correct his wife when she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do. You're supposed to do this on the Sabbath, aren't you? He was an unbeliever. They're watching. What is the proper responsibility of a spouse married to an unbeliever? What should a husband do when married to an unconverted wife? Does he feel superior? Does he lord it over her? Does he treat her with hostility because she's not in the truth? How does that work? How about the flip side? What should a wife do if married to an unconverted husband? Now, I'm not talking about marrying an unconverted husband. I'm talking about being married and then come to the truth and he doesn't come along. That's the situation. Because Paul says you're supposed to marry only in the faith once you know the truth. Does she reject his authority because he's an unbeliever and she has greater authority now? Does she demand her rights, both physical and spiritual, because she's been elevated now? How does this work? How do we deal with it? What do we do? When one becomes converted and is immersed into Yahshua's name, one's citizenship transfers to Yahweh's realm. And as a result, it might be easy to say, I don't belong here. I'm a stranger in this world. I'm an alien. And look down on your spouse who doesn't hold to the same creed. You know, brethren, that's the wrong way in which a believer ought to look at it. Very wrong way. Because we still have a crucial job to perform. Our task is to make the truth known to the world, starting, I suppose, with your family. To do that, we must be an example of a believer in action and not one who becomes haughty. We'll fail in that mission if we're always contentious. Yahshua wasn't contentious to the ignorant. In fact, he had a lot of patience with them. Notice that? The ones who knew better, the religious leaders, he had nothing but bad to say about them. Called them snakes, whited sepulchers, hypocrites. But the ignorant person, the poor Samaritan out there, or somebody else, he took time with them because they just didn't know. There's nothing wrong with not knowing. But when you have a chance to know the truth, then do it. And don't sit there in neutral the rest of your life. So we're going to fail in that mission if we become contentious. Yahshua wasn't contentious, and we must not be either. So not in society, not in our jobs, and not in our marriages. All right. So how does a believer live with a non-believer day in, day out? A non-believing spouse and still live the faith. That's the context of Peter's passage. Let's look first at what Peter says about wives with unsaved husbands. He devotes 6 verses to wives, 1 to husbands. Why? Why? Because when a wife becomes a believer, it is more difficult for her in that family to follow her faith because the husband is already ahead of the family. So what he says carries a lot of weight. In a marriage union. On the other hand, when he's the believer, it's a lot easier because he's already leaning, you know, his direction wherever he goes. In the Greek culture, which is the milieu that Peter is contending with, if a husband becomes a believer, the wife had to accept it. She had no choice. But when a woman in that society was became a believer, she was more like property in the Greek culture. Not much more. And if she became a believer independently of her husband, the potential for conflict was really ramped up. And that is why Peter gives so much more attention to her particular situation. Becoming a believer, you know, may make a wife have airs of superiority over her husband. She may see his authority weaker now that she knows so much more Bible than he does. In the Greek culture, for a woman to change her religion independent of her husband was unthinkable. But see, we have freedom for that. Yahweh gives us that freedom. In Peter's day, a woman's opinion was neither needed nor wanted. There was no legal recourse if a husband abused his wife, even ultimately. But once she comes to the faith, we have a problem. Galatians 2:28 kicks in. In Messiah, there's neither male nor female. We are all one in him. It would be easy for her now to treat her husband with disdain, with contempt, with indifference. But that's not what the word teaches. That's not what we're learning here in Peter's epistle. For a woman to come to the truth apart from her husband could leave her open to abuse. She has to be brave to do so. She has to be able to stand her ground. Maybe this is why Yahshua always had a special place in his heart for the ladies in his life when he went out to teach. Because he knows what it's like to be mistreated. He knows what it's like to have to be constantly abused sometimes. So, I don't know. Whatever it is, he had a special place in his heart for them because they were on the receiving end of so much maltreatment. So the woman is in a rather picklish predicament now. She wants to follow Yahweh. Her husband doesn't. He has no use for her faith. Not only is she going beyond the dictates of the culture, she's also wanting to teach her husband what she knows. Should want to. How does she proceed? What does she do? How do you handle this situation? Before we see what Peter tells her to do, let's see what Peter says not to do. One thing he doesn't tell her is to leave him. He never says, now that you're a believer, go and find a husband who shares your faith. That isn't in the scriptures. Maybe in some people's imaginary books of Exodus or Leviticus. But it's not in the Bible, and no wonder we got 50% divorce rate in this country because That's the way people do it. Just go. I'll solve that problem. I'll just go. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 7:13, a woman who has an unbelieving husband, and he consents to live with her, let her not send him away. That means don't divorce or separate over the faith. In fact, the next verse, 1 Corinthians 7:14 says, the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife. You see, the blessings of Elohim are going to spill over on him from her, as well as the children, because Yahweh is blessing you, the husband is going to receive it too. Some blessing. He'll be a beneficiary of your faith. And that blessing can come in the form of anything, protection from harm, a great job, good health, on and on, happy children. And we've seen it a lot. Our family is blessed because the wife follows the truth, even though he doesn't. An unbeliever married to a believer doesn't know how blessed he is. It doesn't mean the situation for him is going to lead to salvation. It simply means he's blessed in the home now because she's a believer. And that's what we try to tell people, women who say, what do I do? You know, just be the best wife you can be. He'll see that your faith is a benefit to him. What you do, your faithfulness to the marriage, your hard work, your all these virtues you have are going to be a blessing to him. Why would he want to leave you? If he had that in mind. So if an unbelieving husband wants to stay in the believing wife's family or together, is great. He says, Paul or Peter says, hang in there. It's good. Maybe someday you'll convert him. And we see that happening too. Happened in my wife's family. Took years, but finally he came around. And that's good. What would happen if he, you know, if my mother-in-law left? What would happen to him? I hate to think of it. Anyway, sometimes it just takes time. You know, Yahweh calls people at different times, different levels, different reasons. Many are called, few are chosen. It doesn't say they're never going to be called. It doesn't say all are called, but he has his own time frame. So we can't bucket. So if he wants to stay, the believing wife should stay with him. But what if he wants to leave? It's come down to that. He just can't stand it any longer. Then let him leave. Paul says, let him leave. You can't hold him back. You can't tie him down. You can't handcuff him to the doorknob. I mean, if he wants to leave, not much you can do about it. He says the brother or sister is not under bondage, under that, the duties that they are to perform in that marriage. If he leaves, he can't do it. But Elohim has called us to peace, so do the best you can to make sure that doesn't happen. And that's what we're trying to learn here. What this tells us is that Yahweh takes precedence. You don't change your beliefs in order to keep a husband or a wife, as one of my uncles did. He converted over because his wife wanted to. Complete different faith. But it also says you need to honor the marriage contract. You made an unbreakable marriage vow. You can't break it. If he breaks it, what can you do? But neither do you have control over him if he does want to leave. An old saying goes, he who's changed against his will is of the same opinion still. You can't force him to change his beliefs. Only Yahweh can do that. Only Yahweh can do that. You can lead him the best you can, show the best examples of a good life that you can, but you can only do so much. You can't force people. If you're trying to convince someone about something, the worst approach is to launch into a heated argument every time the subject comes up. What's that going to do? Human nature being what it is, using force only makes people push back. Try this. Go up to somebody. Maybe standing here. Go up and make sure this person is well known, of course, and just kind of push on them. They're going to do one of two things. They're either going to back away or they're going to push back. And And that's what happens when you force somebody to accept a faith. They're going to do one of two things. You can't do it. It's not going to work. They have to be convinced, not forced. So, there's the predicament that we find ourselves in. Another mistake she should never make is to preach at him. Don't badger, don't fool him into going to a Bible study when he doesn't know what he's doing until he gets there. Don't do that. That'll just make him mad. That won't work. Don't be silly. Tricks don't work. People don't like to hear that they're wrong, number one. And when you do that, you're telling him that his life, his beliefs at this point are wrong. You've got to come to the truth. He's wrong. So you've got to get over that hurdle, and that's not going to be easy for many people. You've got to convince them. You've got to convince them by your attitude. It's the only way you're going to do it. He must want to change. So that requires a whole different approach, a whole different way of doing things. You can't demand your rights either. You know, as seen in Joshua, there's neither male or female. We're all one when it comes to the faith. But each spouse has a marital function to fulfill in that wedding, in that marriage, in that family. And in marriage, there's still only one head. Scripturally, that's the man. In the Old Testament scriptures, the man was basically the priest of the family. What he said goes. In a two-member unit, one person has to take the lead. He has to make the final decision. That's the way it works. Yahweh says that's the husband. If some women don't accept that, they can take it up with Yahweh. Be my guest. I'm not going to fight it. If that's what he says, I'm not going to fight it. When you fulfill the biblically mandated status that Yahweh tells you to do, he'll bless you for it. Just do it his way. The husband himself answers to Yahshua, or he will ultimately answer to him as the judge. So nobody gets to squeeze out of it, wiggle out of it. While Yahshua, in turn, is submissive to the Father. It's all about submission. There's nothing wrong or bad with deferring to the husband. The righteous character of the believer can be greatly enhanced by learning to put self last. And that's what we try to do in everything. We try to put self last and consider others and what they're going through. That's one of the major lessons of Yahshua. What you do to my brethren, you're doing to me, he says. So what does Peter say she should do? Verse 1, in the same way you wives be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. Just like that lady said, be the best wife you can be. How can he fight that? Isn't that what he wants? Isn't that what we all want? A good spouse who doesn't fight you? Get along, you're in harmony, things are going, all's right with the world. That's what they want. I once saw a bumper sticker. By the way, did you know that, you know what truckers call tailgaters? Bumper stickers. Anyway, the bumper sticker I saw said, well-behaved women rarely make history. Well, that's true. But they do make the kingdom, which is your choice. Peter taught us that if you want to make a maximum impact for the truth on society that you live in, if you want to really do a work for Yahweh, be a model citizen. If you want to make the maximum impact in your job, be a model employee, cooperative employee. And if you want to make a maximum impact in the life of your unconverted husband, be a model wife. Studies show that in the most successful marriages, the husband is emotionally stronger than the wife. And there's a clear-cut division there of authority and responsibility between them. In marriages where wives are emotionally dependent on their husbands, guess what? Better adjusted children result. When there's constant friction because you got two type A's going at each other all the time, poor kids. They got to hear this all the time. Bumping heads, fighting each other all the time. Yahweh knows what he's doing. Yahweh's intent is that we get along in our families as well as in society, in our culture. Paul wrote to Timothy, "I permit not women to teach nor be in authority over men. They are to learn in all subjection. The wife should show her unbelieving mate by her example that her faith has all sorts of good benefits for him." So that doesn't make her less. She has a place. The man has a place. Both of them are under Yahshua. What's the big deal? Each of us has to answer to somebody in this life, in the next one. We will answer. We're to be in submission to Almighty Yahweh. And I think wives have an advantage there because they already know how. Or they should. If they don't, look out. "If any obey not the word, they also may, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives," he says in chapter 3, verse 1. Even without speaking a word, Peter said, she can win him over. She can win him over. Peter says a mate can be gained. In fact, sometimes it's best not to say anything. The power of the unspoken, you know. People looking for a response from me, you don't say anything. That really puts him in a tizzy. What is he thinking? Did I say something wrong? I mean, you know, it's powerful. Lead by example. Show your mate that it is to his or her advantage that your faith be practiced in your home. That real blessings will result. When you're happy, your mate will also be happy. The warm, sweet acquiescence of a believing spouse or wife to her unconverted husband is the strongest, I think the strongest evangelistic tool she can use. It's not just what she says, it's what she is and what she does. The first duty of the wife then is to know her duty as a wife. The second is faithfulness. Verse 2 says, "As they observe your chaste and respectful behavior." Chaste and respectful behavior simply means that she has righteous conduct. That's what it means, righteous conduct. She doesn't break trust. Do you want to win your unsaved husband? Be an example and faithful. It shows that you have respect for him. It also shows your faith. No guy I know wants to be disrespected. That cuts deep into the male psyche. By the way, you as a husband can apply some of these same principles to your spouse. It works both ways. Be faithful, be loving, be the greatest example you can be, and you'll have the greatest marriage. Another thing, he says, be modest. The third characteristic is modesty. Notice verses 3, 4, 5, and 6. In verse 3, it says, "Let your adornment be merely external, braiding." Try that again. "Let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses." That doesn't mean Yahweh's against looking nice. Of course not. He's not against it. Or even wearing a touch of jewelry once in a while. You know, as we know, the bride in the Song of Solomon was beautifully bejeweled. What he's saying is, don't make this your all in all. Just because you look good. But there's nothing going on inside. That's what he's saying. Don't neglect the inner person with a preoccupation with the outer. You know, true beauty is not on the outside anyway. External beauty may capture, but it's not necessarily the thing that's going to hold the heart of a husband if there's nothing on the inside. Makeup, can't cover up an ugly disposition. A loud, crude woman is ugly to most men, no matter how much she looks great. If she's that way, she's still repulsive. So work on virtues, work on your character. It'll make you far more attractive. And by the way, the most beautiful woman on the outside tends to be the most beautiful on the inside, and vice versa. To beautify the inner person, look again at verse 4. "You are to adorn the inner person with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit." Gentle means meek. Quiet means just that, peaceful, calm, in control. The word spirit means disposition. That doesn't mean she's Milk toast, that means she's got an inner strength. And she doesn't let little things bother her. And she won't. But she's strong inside. Here's a little secret, ladies. Men don't like masculine competition in a woman. I don't mean she should, again, be a wimp, because that's a turnoff too. A man likes a woman who is ladylike, but also has strength of character and inner strength as well. If you want beauty, the most beautiful woman is the woman with a gentle disposition coupled with inner dignity and integrity, and who makes her husband feel special. That's what wins the heart of a man. Look at verse 5 of 1 Peter 3, which gives an illustration. For after this manner, in old time, the righteous women also, who trusted in Yahweh, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. And he names one in verse 6, Sarah. Sarah is a model. She deferred to Abraham. She called him master. Imagine wives doing that today. What is this? I dream a genie? Master this, master that? Sounds really strange in our culture. But that's how far the feminist movement has twisted this culture from a principle of Scripture. Granted, Abraham was a believer, and he deserved it. Some guys don't deserve it, you know. That's a problem too. But if he's honorable, he always said, just honor him. It's a lot easier for a believing wife to respect a believing husband, yet the principle is still there either way. To win your unbelieving husband to the truth, be the best virtuous wife you can be. He can't argue that. Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman, read it. She's great. She takes charge. She takes charge of the family. She does what she needs to do to promote the family. She's faithful. Live the Bible so he can see the difference. Be considerate of his needs. Each one has to find out what's necessary, what the husband prefers or whatever, then do it. You're one. You become one flesh. You think the same or should. Think along the same lines, maybe not, of course, the same thing, but same goal is what I'm trying to say. You have the same goal. Don't give him any reason to want to leave. Don't give him any reason, because that could be, you know, come back on you too. Make your marriage a model, as it should be and can be, with the respect that the union deserves from both sides. Win him over and by your life. Show him that you're far different from most women of the world. It can be done. I've seen it done. Show how valuable, good, and true the faith is. Read of the virtue of Esther, who saved her people and the favor of the king, won the favor of the king by her faithfulness to Yahweh. Does this guarantee anything in your case? Sadly, you may never win him over. It may never culminate in success. But your chances are far better if you do what the Bible tells us to do. You follow these biblical precepts rather than launching into battle every time the subject of religion comes up. What about husbands with unconverted wives? What's he to do? Again, this is not as common a situation as the reverse, but I should say is common a problem, but it is there. Support her needs. Read Ephesians 5:21. Be subject one to another. Wives to the husbands, husbands to the wives. Verse 25 says, love your wife. You care for her. You do for her what you can in that relationship. You do everything to make her life enjoyable too in that relationship, because it's going to turn around and reflect on you as well. It's going to be your advantage too. We subjugate our own needs to meet the needs of the woman who's going to share our life, even if she's not a believer. Again, if she's willing to stay in the relationship and not split, then Peter says, share it. Because someday again, if you live your faith according to the Bible, there's a good chance she's going to convert too. Sometimes it just takes time. You can never give up. Sometimes it just takes time. 2 Peter 3:7 says, give her honor, that your prayers not be hindered. You see, Yahweh's looking and watching, and how you behave with your wife is going to be seen by Yahweh and judged by Yahweh. And if you're failing in that, you're not going to listen to your prayers either. Now imagine wanting your wife to accept the truth, but her rejection of the truth at this point makes you treat her with some contempt. Peter says if you really treat her poorly, your prayers themselves are going to be short-circuited. So you defeat your own purpose. Treat her as Yahshua would. I mean, in everything, we say treat her as Yahshua would, treat everyone as Yahshua would. You'll have no problems. Often the failure of a man to lead his wife to truth reflects a headship flaw in himself. He may simply be afraid of her. And because of that, he continues denying truth, and he continues to cower. You know, our culture has a male identity problem. How many John Waynes do you see out there? I'm not saying that that's how everybody should be. But a man who is a man can get things done. We have a lot of wimps running around. Yahweh expects a husband to be a leader, as was the case in the Old Testament when the men acted like the priest in the family. They were expected to be leaders. As for the ministry, if a man can't lead a family to the truth, he's not qualified to be a minister. Do you know that? 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1. That's one of the qualifications to be a minister. He has to have his family in his subjection. If he can't do that, how is he going to do the assembly? He can't convince his own family. He's not fit to be a leader. Now, granted, some people come in at the tail end and it's too late. I can see that too. But if you, from the start, have a young family and you grow and you teach and the children learn and it's successful, hey, you have the qualifications. Now, if your children are grown, you come into the faith, I mean, what can you do? I mean, you can only try to help them understand, but it may not work every time. Yet, you can never give up. Never stop trying. It also reveals a flaw when a wife refuses to submit to Yahweh. And it takes a man to be a man to say, okay, we're not going to cook pork in this house anymore. We're going to keep the Sabbath. You can do whatever you do on the other 6 days, but you're not going to be doing them on the Sabbath. The faith of Yahshua that we all are seeking to learn and to overcome the world means putting down selfish goals and pride. Human pride is difficult for most to overcome. It's ingrained. It's in our DNA, and we got to overcome that. If the wife is already religious and believes that the truth is important, the believing husband usually has no problem there. Usually. I remember a fellow came to the feast. Maybe I mentioned this before. His wife was really into Christmas. Oh, my goodness. We stopped in. I guess it was in Indiana somewhere. We stopped in one time. It's like in November, and she's already gearing up. I mean, you ought to see the house. All these trappings of Christmas. And he said, I can't get her away from this. I said, man, this is crazy. This was her life. Her husband wasn't even her life. Xmas was her life. And her house showed it in every foot of decoration. The problem is he let it go too far. He didn't stop it from the start. But then again, maybe it was too late. Maybe when he came to the truth and she was already going, you know. She was already going 100 miles an hour with Xmas. And maybe, I don't know, but he had a real problem there. But if she's already religious, and maybe that's what he could have done is taken it that angle. You know, did you know that Yahshua wasn't born this day? You know what? I mean, you believe in Yahshua, take a look. You know, take a look. Some will just, you know, I'm not going to touch that Bible. They're going to keep on going with their life. Yeah, what can you do, you know? But if she's got a softer heart, willing to look at it, then you've got the door open. You've got a foot in the door. Anyway, people face all sorts of issues, and you got to learn sometimes, and you know your spouse better than anybody else, and you know how to handle and maybe get through Keep in mind that conversion normally doesn't happen overnight. Be patient. It sometimes takes years. You may have to endure many fiery trials and criticism, but stand fast. Someday the light may go on. Oh, and usually it happens when someone else brings it up. You notice that? They may not, you know, they push back when you say it. But when somebody outside says something like that, or they read it, or they see it on the news or something, oh, maybe there's something to that, and they'll look at it. You know, children are that way. Oh, mom and dad, they don't know anything. But when a friend says the same thing, just the way it is. They're more receptive. Human nature, I guess. It may take years. You may have to endure. Part of your witness is to show that it is so important to you that no matter what, you're not going to let go of your crown. No matter what. That means a lot of prayer, a lot of going to Yahweh. Should conversion never happen with that spouse, then accept that fact and rejoice that Yahweh has at least called you, and you can have an impact maybe with your children, maybe with relatives, somehow, people that respect you. At least you can do that much, and Yahweh will obviously reward you for what you can do. See, the second resurrection is a time when those who didn't follow in this life may be given that opportunity then, simply because they were ignorant. They weren't recalcitrant. They weren't completely against the faith and worked against it and fought it. They just didn't know, and so they just didn't do anything about it. You know, inertia. The body at rest tends to stay at rest, and that's what we have to deal with every day. But if the heart was there, Yahweh could read hearts, and he saw that there was a willingness in there, maybe the second resurrection would be the time. Never give up. Never give up. And make sure it's not you that causes any kind of division. Truth is something that we have to, once we accept, we have to go with. Yahweh has a plan, and ultimately, it's all in his hands. So we have to submit to him in all that we do. Submit to him, and everything will be right in the end. We just have to get through this life, and sometimes this life presents some real issues. But you know, it's also got a lot of blessings. We also have a lot of hope in this life, too. So keep that in mind, and hopefully these few words will help. And may we all have strong families with believing spouses ultimately. May Yahweh bless.